welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kalman. Today I'm pleased to have as my guest Colleen Morrow, who is the author of Spiritual Telepathy, Ancient Techniques to Access the Wisdom of Your Soul. Colleen has 30 years' experience in magazine publishing, including work as a publisher, editor, advertising director, and marketing consultant. And she was led through her own intuition to launch Intuition Magazine in 1988, and then she was again led to write Spiritual Telepathy to give some of the ancient wisdom, I guess, a more readable and digestible form for people who need to have this information. Thanks, Colleen, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So would you like to tell the listening audience a little bit about your background, your and how you developed your intuitive skills and that leading to Intuition Magazine and finally to this book?
Well, I studied intuition development for many years, and I had the experience that I talked about in the book. It was in 1988, and I was between jobs. I was living in San Francisco, which was not a good place then to have a career in magazine publishing. And I had been very lucky to have three back-to-back jobs. And I was between jobs wondering if my luck had finally run out and wondering what I was going to do. I was sending resumes out to magazines and wondering if I was going to have to move, which I really didn't want to do. And I had always thought about having my own magazine, but I didn't seem like a good candidate for it at the time. My bank account was pretty low, and I was just sort of barely paying my rent. And I had an experience. Excuse me. I decided to take the day off from my frenetic job search and just spend the day outside gardening and just giving myself a break. And I suddenly had this intuitive experience, and it was different than the other experiences I've had. I usually, until that time, would access intuition more through an emotional or a body-based experience. But I suddenly had a thought that was seemed to be just delivered into my brain, and I instantly knew it wasn't my thought. And the thought was the Center for Applied Intuition. And that was the center that I knew about. I had met its the founder some years before. But it didn't really make sense in the context of my looking for a magazine job. But I thought about it for a few days, and then I decided to act on it. And I contacted Bill, the man who ran the center, and I asked him to send me some information about the center and what they were doing. And a big manila envelope came, and I dumped it out on my dining room table. And one of the items was a very small typewritten journal called Applied Psi. And as I looked through that journal, I suddenly had another experience, like the thought just dropped into my mind that this could be a real magazine. It was really fascinating. It was about intuition and creativity. And I thought, this, you know, if it had a different name, if it had a real format, this could be a real magazine. And I got real excited about it. And it seemed like a perfect marriage of my interest and experience. And I called Bill and said I wanted to talk to him, so I went over and told him what I had thought, and he just lit up and said that he had always dreamed of having it be a real magazine, but the right person hadn't shown up. So I went home and I banged out a proposal and took it back, and suddenly I had my own magazine. It was Intuition, a magazine for the higher potential of the mind. And I set up shop in my dining room because he had a tiny two-room office and got the first issue out. And I myself, I trekked it around to all the local bookstores. And when it had all had sold out, I realized that my hunch was right. People were interested in this. And then when he closed the center, he signed the rights over to me, and then I later got a grant to set up an office and get a staff and so on. So it really took off from there.
Yeah. Well, that's actually how things work. I mean, usually the idea drops in pretty well formed. I was guided to go to the Airport Vortex in Sedona. I was actually in a meeting with Hertok, the Keys of Enoch meeting, and I was told to leave the meeting and go to the Airport Vortex. And, of course, I didn't know where that was, so I asked at the gas station, and they directed me over there. And then in one big amazing vision, I was guided to build the center here. And I was told the center would be for the disasters. And it certainly has been for people all over the world whose medicine, you know, especially complications from iatrogenic-induced disease, they would die young otherwise, come here for treatment, and other disasters as well. So,
that's amazing. Where did you live before?
Yeah. Well, I was just visiting in Sedona. I had been in Atlanta, but I didn't have the, I didn't realize I was supposed to build something much bigger than just a surgical practice.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have 4 operating rooms, and we have a worldwide practice. People come from all over the world with injuries from breast implants and other, mm-hmm. you know, fibromyalgia and chemical toxicity and other electromagnetic, electromagnetic sensitivity, all the things that, you know, regular medicine is denying exists, Morgellons, and yet much of it is iatrogenic and or chemically induced. And medicine just doesn't understand that. They don't get that humans can't take in an unlimited amount of chemicals, especially if they have a detoxification pathway problem, or nor can they live right next to a cell tower with smart meters and not get sick.
Mm-hmm.
So we help people who have those challenges. So
is that how you access?
Drop in. Yeah, it's a similar.
So that's how you access information. It just drops into the brain.
It does,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty well formulated when it drops in.
Mm-hmm. That was my experience.
With details.
Too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's my experience too. And I wrote the book. My experience before that was, as I said, I accessed information more from an emotional or body-based sensation. You know, I'd have a queasy sensation, or I'd feel like something was right physically. And spiritual telepathy is direct communication from our soul and from higher beings. And that type of communication is the type that we were talking about, that it's directly dropped into our brains. And I think it's really the next step in the intuition work. It's called the higher correspondence to our lower intuition, our personal intuition. And it gives us higher levels of information. Our personal intuition, I think, is pretty instinctual, and I think that's how I was accessing it, in an instinctual way. It's our gut feelings. And we get information about our personal life, but when we build a bridge to the soul and have constant contact with the soul, we get information from a higher level about our life purpose, and more about our life purpose and more universal themes than our basic day-to-day lives.
In your book, you were talking about that this will be widespread, which I also believe. I believe that, you know, science can only go so far. Science is limited by 3 dimensions and, you know, linear time and other constructs that really cause it to have certain problems. Yes, a scientist can have a great idea and then go and improve that, but we need a more systematic way of figuring out answers to all of our problems, not just health problems, but also environmental problems and the problems that we're having with our oceans right now. The answers to those problems have to be actually accessed from the higher levels. I don't think we necessarily have the answer in the third dimensional realm that science is able to easily get to, but I believe people, spiritual scientists with the ability to bring information down from higher levels, is how we're going to start solving a lot of problems.
I absolutely agree. And imagine what the world would be like if a critical mass of people were able to do that. One of my all-time favorite books was written by Willis Harmon, who was the president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. It's a 1984 book that was called Higher Creativity. And it was actually one of the inspirations for Intuition Magazine. And in this book, he looked at the biographies of many artists, writers, and composers, scientists, and inventors, and discovered that the source of their greatest achievements was an intuitive breakthrough.
Right.
And the book has many quotes, and some of them have become familiar. And when I was researching my own book, Spiritual Telepathy, I went back to that book, and I started reading some of his original sources. And what I found when I read the full text of the articles was that many of these people we call creative geniuses were talking about their contact with the soul as the portal to this higher flow of universal information, in exactly the same way that the wisdom teachings teach it, that it's the soul that provides the doorway. And I found information on writers, composers, scientists, and they all talked about the same thing, which I put into my book in the spiritual telepathy section. And it was fascinating to me.
Well, I think that's true. I think there is a saying that, you know, intelligence gets you so far, but really the greatest of any field, any person in any field is intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets you a lot further.
Right.
So intelligence, or your use of your intellect, use of your mind, is important, and the mind needs to be developed. And I really appreciated your chapters on the mind in your book, because I believe that we have to use logic and intelligence at first, but then later on intuition replaces the barriers that we have with our intellect with mm-hmm. so much more that is so important.
Mm-hmm. The wisdom teachings talk about the three levels of perception. There's instinct, which is an earlier level, and that mm-hmm. gets replaced eventually by rational knowing, which is where we
right.
are now. And then the next step is pure intuitive knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And each time we don't lose the old way of perception. It just goes below our conscious awareness. We have our gut feelings, and part of the intuition movement was really to honor that. But mm-hmm. it kind of operates, you know, underground. And for many people, we just learn to discount it. And so now the next level is the pure intuitive information, and our rational way of knowing will also then slip below the level of our conscious awareness, but it will still be there.
Right.
It's an evolutionary step each time.
And it's interesting, because some of the cultures, like the Aborigines and the Natives, were using a lot of these higher means of communication, and pure forms of telepathy have been recorded in these cultures. So it seems like we stepped back a few notches from where they were,
mm-hmm.
and we need to catch up from, you know, we need to develop their abilities, or maybe that's where we're headed now. But isn't it interesting that there were cultures, or still are cultures, that use these mind-to-mind telepathic communication on
mm-hmm.
a regular basis.
Right, right. I think actually what they're doing is more instinctive. That was what I figured out through the research I did, that they
mm-hmm.
haven't focused on developing the rational mind in the way the West has. And so they rely more on, and they have a better development of, this instinctive kind of knowing.
Mm-hmm. That's probably true. So you talk about the three types of telepathy in Chapter 4. Would you like to go through those?
Sure. And it relates to what we were just talking about. The first type of telepathy is instinctual, and it operates as our
mm-hmm.
gut feelings. And because it relates to our emotions and our emotional bodies, it also creates a psychic connection to the people that we're closest to. We just know when a loved one has died or is in trouble. And Rupert Sheldrake has written a lot about this, and he says that this telepathy operates most obviously in some sort of emergency situations where there's a death or distress or accidents
mm-hmm.
or something, that it creates the heightened emotion creates the strong telepathic communication from one person to another. And as I mentioned in the book, and why you just brought up, the kahunas in Hawaii think that telepathic messages are sent directly from one solar plexus to another. That's the center of emotion. And so I found
mm-hmm.
this over and over, and I found it very fascinating that they were all basically saying the same thing. The African Bushmen believe that we're all connected by a stream of energy that extends from one belly button to another, and that they
mm-hmm.
use these horizontal lines like telephone wires to send out telepathic messages. The
mm-hmm.
Australian Aboriginals believe it's the Miwi, which is located in the pit of the stomach, that makes it possible for them to see or hear at a distance. And
mm-hmm.
the Japanese use haraji, or what they call belly talk, to size up a potential business partner or proposal. And that word derives from hara, which means belly or guts, and ji, which means the art of. So they talk about the art of the belly and how that
mm-hmm.
helps them make their decisions. And in our culture, as we just talked about, it's gut feelings. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was just going to comment that Harry Carey, which is the act of suicide by stabbing yourself in the gut, is that the hara kara? I mean, is that the Japanese pronunciation?
Oh, that's not really haraji, but that makes sense. that's interesting.
Well, maybe the hara indicates the stomach is,
yeah,
and kari is destruction or something or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, hari is belly or guts.
Right.
So that makes
right.
sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And then we have mental telepathy, which is thought transference or mind-to-mind telepathy. And
mm-hmm.
this type of telepathy utilizes the throat center or chakra. And so we're moving up the chakra system. Instinctual mm-hmm. telepathy utilizes the solar plexus, and mental telepathy utilizes the throat. And it's mm-hmm. interesting, in the scientific exploration of telepathy, I think a lot of that is actually clairvoyance, which comes from the emotional level. And the scientists often talk about how hard it is to tease out telepathy, what's really telepathy and what's clairvoyance. And I think most of it is clairvoyance. True mm-hmm. mental telepathy is mental contact between two conscious minds. And we have some good examples of this, and I put this in the book, in the work of Helena Blavatsky and Helena Rowrich and Alice Bailey. And they were the people who brought in the modern-day interpretations of the ageless wisdom. And in each case, they were said to be basically taking dictation from Tibetan masters. And Alice Bailey talks a lot about this in her book, that a Tibetan man, when she was 15, made an appearance in the flesh and told her that he'd have work for her to do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And then years later, when she was a mother of three, she suddenly heard a voice within asking for her cooperation in the writing of a series of books. And after some reluctance, she agreed. And as she says in the book, she, in the beginning, she simply listened and wrote down the dictated words as they were dropped into her brain one by one.
Right.
And over time, as their minds became attuned, she was able to directly register and write down the thoughts and ideas of the Tibetan master. And over mm-hmm. a 30-year period, they produced a long series of books. She was
right.
the one who introduced the term New Age into our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that
right.
sort of,
that's
it's,
again,
I think,
right.
yeah, I think it's a more developed type of telepathy than what is now being studied scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes that kind of ability to be completely focused. And the other type that we're seeing more in these scientific stories, I think it really is clairvoyance. And then,
yeah, I was,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say that I was giving a talk at the Kundalini conference in California, and I went back and to my room, and I was asked to write an article, and it was really strange because it was coming from a group who identified themselves as the Elohim, but it was obvious that the Elohim viewed the human race as a single organism, because what was coming through was about the spiritual development of the human race, you know, as it went up the chakra system, but the Elohim was seeing us, it was a different viewpoint. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't one human viewpoint. It was something much higher than us viewing the human race as developing
mm-hmm.
as a single entity or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, so it was just dropped into my head. It was,
wow.
it was, and so I wrote it and it's up on the website. I mean, I've written a lot of things over the years, but that I know was coming from a different, wasn't coming from me. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't have the viewpoint above the human race. So,
mm-hmm. I think that that's spiritual telepathy. And
I think it is too.
Yeah, that's exactly spiritual telepathy, and that's what's going to make a big difference in our world. When we make contact with the soul, everything changes because we realize that we are, like you just said, part of the soul of humanity, and
mm-hmm.
we lose our sense of separateness, and we
right.
lose that sense of personal ambition, and
mm-hmm.
we develop a more universal consciousness where we start to think in terms of we rather than me, and we work for the greater good. And again, we can imagine
right.
how the world changes when there's a critical mass of people who have that perspective and that experience.
And a lot of the lower emotions simply cease to exist. Loneliness,
mm-hmm.
you know, being unhappy or being discontent, all of that just goes away.
Right.
And it just doesn't exist anymore. I mean, you can
right.
remember when you used to have those feelings, but they're not there anymore. So it's just much, much more pleasant living in the kind of energy that you have when you've developed to that level. And of course, as you mentioned in your book, the most important tools to get to these levels are meditation. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's critical.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad you told that story because it was such a perfect example of what spiritual telepathy actually is. This is the highest type of telepathy, and it's only possible when we create a link between the brain, the mind, and the soul. And when we do this, we have the ability to serve as intermediaries between the physical and spiritual worlds, which is exactly what you were doing. You were pulling down some higher-level information and sharing it with the world. And the masters of the masters who guide the evolution of our planet, they cannot directly affect life on Earth. They have to work through us. And they look for people who have that direct line of communication between the soul and the brain. And when that happens, information and ideas can be stepped down via our souls and impressed upon our brain.
That's true. And a lot of really interesting information is coming in right now about, you know, what the true nature of disease and some of the major, major economic problems that we're having, especially around healthcare, because that, of course, is my field. Tremendously interesting ideas are coming in on how to solve these problems.
Yeah.
And I gave a talk at the Global Humanitarian Conference at Emory on some of the ideas that were coming in that will really, if they can be implemented, will really affect how affordable healthcare will be.
That is amazing, absolutely amazing. And one of the main things that I wanted to do with this book is to show people that we all have the ability to make contact with the higher worlds. Excuse me, I have to cough. I've always been very touched and even envious by stories of people who could communicate with the higher worlds. And we have the experience of our saints, and we know that they spent their lives in monasteries and they devoted their entire lives to spiritual practice. And that's not something that most of us have the ability or even the inclination to do. But it also seems to happen to seemingly ordinary people like Joan of Arc, who talked to saints and angels, and Eileen Caddy, who received the guidance that led to the founding of the Findhorn community in Scotland, and the botanist George Washington Carver, who walked in the woods every morning to talk to God. And apparently God was talking back. He called it the divine radio. And it's always stirred, whenever I read about this, anybody that actually can do this, it always has stirred a very deep longing in me. And I've always wondered, is it only special people or people more involved than I am that can have these experiences? And is it somehow preordained that some of us are given this special gift? And what I discovered as I immersed myself in this topic is that it's not just for the special people, that it's something that we all can do, that it's our evolutionary destiny to develop this higher level of perception. And many spiritual leaders and philosophers and scientists are telling us that we're poised on the brink of an evolutionary leap, and it's as profound as our emergence from animal to human. And when we make contact with the soul, we take our first steps out of the strictly human world and into the superhuman world, so we cross the boundary between superhuman and human development, and the higher worlds then become part of our human worlds, as you've experienced exactly that.
That is, and that's what, when the different religions talk about ascension, it is the ascension of consciousness that we are talking about. It is, well, each kingdom does it. I mean, look at the dogs that and cats people have. I mean, they're developing depression, they're developing anxiety, you know, they're developing very human emotional things. The top of the animal kingdom is becoming a lot more human-like. And then the top of the human kingdom is becoming a lot more spiritual. You know, there's people, there's breatharians now that don't eat or drink. I mean, good Lord. I mean, that they almost, well, they would belong to a different kingdom. You know, that's the spiritual kingdom where you don't have to eat or drink. So we have people who can take energy directly in from the sun and don't require, you know, what the rest of us require. So I think all of the kingdoms are constantly moving up, and at a certain period of time, which we probably entered into about 2012, the kingdoms get there's a lot of speciation. I know David Wilcock talks about this. There's a huge burst in the number of species that are coming in and going out at this time frame because of this energy coming in. So we're being subjected to this energy right now that is driving this evolutionary, I guess, jumping of kingdoms. You know, we're all going to be evolving a lot quicker, or have the potential to evolve a lot quicker if we take advantage of the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Barbara Mark Pebbard calls us the crossover generation, that mm-hmm. we're responsible for leading the way from one stage of our species evolution to the next. And Eckhart Tolle talks about this, but he talks about it in more stark terms. He says we have the ability to either evolve or die. And they mm-hmm. both say that evolution happens as a result of some sort of crisis that propels or forces us to make a leap forward. And Tolle mm-hmm. uses the example of an amphibian whose habitat is slowly drying up,
right.
excuse me, and that they're forced to develop the ability to live on land or die. And our
right.
own habitat is slowly drying up. And we're mm-hmm. faced with that same need now, but we are going to make the leap not on land, but to the subtle worlds.
Mm-hmm. Right. And not everybody will make it. I mean, that's what, when the Bible talks about separating the wheat from the chaff, what they're talking about is the, you know, part of the human race will evolve and part will devolve. And that
mm-hmm.
that's at each time when this opportunity occurs, everybody has a choice. You know, everybody has a choice of whether or not they're going to spiral upward or spiral down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this energy coming in is very important. I think they talk about this energy coming from the galactic center, and it affects the chakra system in a way that either produces more spiritual development, more clairvoyance, and more gifts like telepathy and peace and access to the higher worlds, or if you've got a lot of baggage, it can actually cause physical illness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it will take you in one of two ways, either up or down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there's so many radio shows right now telling people about this situation. You know, you're not going to see it on mainstream media very often, but there's a huge number of radio shows and magazines and just an incredible amount of books on the subject. You know that back in the mid-80s, there weren't a lot of, there were only certain books out, Be Here Now by Ram Dass and books like that. But now there's a huge number of books.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people that want to learn about this have a great opportunity.
It was interesting, isn't it, how the intuition field evolved. First, it was sort of a trickle in the late mm-hmm. 80s. There was just a couple of books out. And I started the magazine then, and by late 90s, it was just an absolute flood. There was just mm-hmm. many, many, many books. I couldn't believe how many books were coming out. And now I think we're ready for the next step, exactly what you've been talking about, what you experienced. And it's something that we can cultivate. Some people seem to have the ability to do that, but mm-hmm. we can cultivate it too directly by this type of creative meditation that I mentioned in the book, that we can consciously build a bridge between the mind and the soul, and it happens mm-hmm. through the process of creative meditation. And it's the same in the same way that our homes are wired for telephone and internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
We, in this type of meditation, we create the threads and cables that will link us to the higher world. And most meditation practice focuses only on quieting the mind, and in this type of meditation, we go a step further. And we actively train our minds to transmit information from the soul to the brain. And
mm-hmm.
we do this by daily meditation, by projecting our attention upward from the mind to the soul every day. And as we do this, the threads, the energetic threads that we extend, fuse, blend, and widen. And we do create mm-hmm. a symbolic bridge of communication between the personality and the soul.
Yeah, I think they call that the rainbow bridge. Is
mm-hmm.
that correct?
Yeah, it's found in every culture. In the Bible, it's called the straight or narrow gate.
Mm-hmm.
In the Hindu text, they call it the Antakarana, which is the inner instrument. And
right.
one thing that I found in immersing myself in this topic that I found very interesting is that we don't do it alone. When we turn our attention upward, the soul turns its attention down, and the
right.
bridge is actually built through the united effort of both the soul and the human personality.
Mm-hmm.
That every time we focus our attention upward, we anchor these small threads of energy that eventually, thread by thread, form an inner stairway to the higher worlds. And as we move upwards and make contact with the soul, our vibration starts to pick up. And when the vibration of our mind and our brains matches that of the soul, we can enter the subtle worlds at will. And that's the step that we're taking, and that's where we'll eventually end up. And this is what we've seen in our great spiritual leaders like the Buddha and the Christ and so on.
Right. And I think something in addition is happening, too. I think that, one of the barriers that surrounded our planet, and probably about 35 other planets that were part of the Luciferian Rebellion, that barrier is being taken away now. That's part of the ascension. And what that means is that this process will be much easier. It won't require years and years of meditation and monastery work and probably lifetimes, actually. It's probably not just years, it's lifetimes of developing this ability to build this bridge. But it'll be much quicker now because the natural, the quarantine is being taken off the planet. Mm. And when that happens, I think that it'll be quite easy to build this bridge between the mind and the soul.
That's a great way to put it, that the quarantine is being taken off. I love that.
I think it is.
Yeah.
And I think people will then realize that, well, they suddenly are in constant communication with their conscience, because, of course, your conscience is your soul saying, nope, you don't want to do that, you know. And as we become more, attuned to that, then people start behaving better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll start making wiser choices on a day-by-day basis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we might go to brotherhood, like Christ said. You know, we might actually get there.
Right. What I've discovered in researching and working with this topic is that the most important thing if we want to build this bridge is discipline, meditation mm-hmm. discipline. And that's not a very exciting message, but it's really true. It's the repeated effort of our day-to-day meditation that really builds the bridge. And what I found, and I've heard this from other people, is that when I stop, even for a few days, it starts to dissipate because it's so subtle that we have to really keep at it. But once we have a little taste of that soul contact, we want more. And it doesn't seem so arduous all of a sudden. We want more of it, so we're willing to make that discipline part of our lives.
Yeah, I think that's important. And you also talked about diet. When you start to meditate on a regular basis, certain foods are no longer attractive, and they just sort of drop out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whipping the lower bodies into shape is really part of this process. And in esoteric training, it's called the path of probation. And they're refinement practices so that we can sort of upgrade the physical, emotional, and mental bodies. So they're starting to vibrate at the soul level. And in every tradition, the requirements are the same. You upgrade the physical body, you calm the mind, and you calm the emotions. And there's a lot of different ways to get there, but they're basically all saying the same thing, that we really have to upgrade the body by eating pure foods, that we have to quiet our minds and emotions. And I think the work that Jack Kornfield is doing is really important. Because what I discovered, what I found in my own life, and I've heard this from other people, is that once you get disciplined with meditation and you really make a commitment and you sit down and you quiet yourself down, any old emotional trash that you have is going to come up. And he's talked about that a lot. When he started to teach meditation, he discovered that at least half of the people couldn't sit still and develop those quiet disciplines because they had so much unfinished business and grief and anger and so on. And he's really been a pioneer in bringing Western psychotherapy into Eastern spiritual contemplative practice, that we have to have that quiet spirit and that many of us need that kind of therapeutic work to be able to get there. I did. I did therapy in my younger years, and what I discovered when I really got serious with this meditation practice is that I needed to do more. I really had trouble really quieting myself down. Anything that's unfinished starts to bubble up. So that's a really important part of the practice.
It is. I had an interesting experience when I was going through this. I basically went into meditation one day and was told, quit your job. So I did for 5 months and meditated like 6 or 7 hours a day, became vegetarian, did fasting, you know, and worked with a spiritual group 3 or 4 times a week. So, you know, a real intense practice that then opened me up fairly significantly. And basically what I was guided to do was take flashcards. And this was very effective. You just let the flashcard come up with the fear on it or the concern, you know, bankruptcy or, you know, your own death or your this or that. Whatever the fear was, it came up. I think the soul brought it up. I didn't really, you know, it just came up on its own. And then I would look at it and then accept it, you know, accept it into my life, whatever it was, and then release it.
Hmm.
And then that was the way I did a lot of releasing work for, you know, the more negative emotions, fear-based emotions.
Did those come up when you started to meditate and you felt like I really had to sort of take out the trash?
No, it was just an exercise that was just given to me, that was how I was going to release everything.
Hmm.
You know, it came up on a flashcard. It was literally a flashcard in my mind's eye.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
So it was a little game of just releasing.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolyn Mace said that in this sort of spiritual development, it's common either to lose everything or to think you're going to lose everything. So a lot of people actually lost everything. You know, they went bankrupt. They had their husband or wife or significant other have an affair with their best friend, and you know, they actually went through all of these losses. Or in my case, it was kind of interesting. I just was told in my meditation group that by three or four different clairvoyants and some not associated with the group, that I was going to die in about 2 to 3 weeks. So I just accepted the fact I was going to die in a car crash. I kept driving. It wasn't any big deal. And then 2 or 3 weeks passed, and the messages were coming in. And even my mother was saying she was worried I was going to die in a car crash. You know, I mean, they really chimed in, everybody around me, to get me thinking that this was coming to pass. And so I released everything. And then 2 or 3 weeks came by, and, well, I think you're not going to die in a car crash. I kind of did it on the fast track. I released everything, and then I was ready for my mission. When
that's
I went
great.
Back
that
to work,
like
that's when, yeah, that's when I started building what we have now, what you saw on the website.
Mm-hmm. That's a great story.
Yeah. So you do have to die. You know, your lower self does have to die, or you know, maybe not die. You know, like die, but you have to replace it with a higher, more refined body of information, of thinking, of emotions, of mental clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're working with the hierarchy, and it's important that you're able to do what they instruct you to do. It is a hierarchy. It's not, you know, it's not something where you decide what you're going to do. You actually ask what to do, and you're told.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think that Jesus modeled some of those steps for us in the New Testament, that the crucifixion is sort of a symbolic representation of that death of the lower self.
Yeah.
I found that very interesting, that how much esoteric information is actually in the Bible, something I didn't know before and I'd never read the New Testament. And it was something that I was very touched by, that we have our own tradition, that we don't need to be Sufis or Buddhists or Hindus, if that doesn't feel right, that we have our own esoteric tradition in place.
And especially when you think of all the evidence that maybe Jesus didn't really die on the cross, maybe he was, you know, he used the esoteric information of the time to continue to live, that he was then, his lower self really did die then. It was interesting.
And I've had the experience in these last few years where I've found myself in circumstances that really can only be resolved from looking at things from a higher level, that I was almost forced into this process of soul contact. And I think that happens too. Like you said, you have to confront your worst fears or whatever is going to make you make that step.
Yeah. And then, you know, from the other side, basically what happens is it's fine if you die, because you know you don't die. I mean, you're real aware that you don't die.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anything. There really are no fears on the other side of this, because anything of this world is temporary and changing constantly, and the world where your soul is where you're identified with, and you know that that's eternity, and that's there's nothing, it's like the Course in Miracles says, nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal exists.
Mm-hmm.
And therein lies the peace of God. I mean, mm-hmm. so this world is unreal, and the real world you're already in contact with, so you're not concerned about what happens after your death.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of fear goes away then.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
So,
one of the main messages of the book is how much this step is needed, that those of us who do this either spontaneously like you did or more as a result of training like I'm in the process of doing, it's so necessary now, and those of us who do this are the pioneers who will really lead the way to a new mm-hmm. civilization. That it's absolutely essential that more of us step up to the plate and make this happen.
Yeah, I think from what I can see, when it's time, it's time, and things mm-hmm. start to happen. If you resist, then more things start to happen. You know, mm-hmm. you lose your job, you lose your, you lose your relationships, you can lose your health. And I think you had a good example in the book of somebody who went through this process because they were in bed and couldn't do anything but watch the sun on the floorboards, you know.
Yeah,
so they
yeah.
were pretty much their attention was completely captivated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you're more willing, and I think your book is a great place for people to start, if you're more willing, then perhaps you won't have to lose so much
mm-hmm.
in the process. Maybe you mm-hmm. can just think you're going to lose things like I did, which was a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you can really do this willingly rather than from a place of, gee, you know, I'm completely unable to do anything else but the spiritual work, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up that story, because that's one of the things that I really wanted to do in the book, is to have personal experiences, because this
mm-hmm.
information is usually theoretical. And, you know, you have to sort of hunker down and put your glasses on and be willing to read it. And I wanted to have it be more accessible, and
right.
I wanted to show how it changes people's lives, because it does.
Yeah, before we started the show, I shared with Colleen the information that I had actually gone out and bought, I think, about 10 of the Alice Bailey books, and they sat on my shelf for at least 5 years before I started reading them. But reading them, I actually started reading them during the time I was off work, during those 5 months. And they were very, very difficult to understand and required a lot of time. And it was certainly worthwhile. But, you know, her book, Spiritual Telepathy, distills the information in this series of books into something that is a lot easier to read and a lot easier to understand. So.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I also wanted to do in the book was to show that this is the core teaching that exists at the heart of all of our religions. And
it is.
I wanted it
yeah.
to reach an audience wider than those that usually read esoteric books.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted it to be more credible, and I thought that that was a good avenue, that it's hard to dismiss if it's everywhere. And it really
right.
is the core teaching that exists in all traditions, all
yeah.
cultures.
Yeah. Well, you've done a good job, and
thank you.
I think is the book released right now? Is that
it is?
Is it available?
It's available on
mm-hmm.
Amazon. I also just launched a website yesterday, and that's spiritualtelepathy.net. So
mm-hmm.
you can get it from the publisher, from Barnes and Noble, or from Amazon. I think Amazon has the best price.
Okay. And is there any information, contact information for yourself you'd like to give?
It's on the website. Anybody that's interested
uh-huh.
in joining my mailing list, I'd be glad to have you. I'm going to be releasing information about the next step, what I'm going to do after the book, and so on. So I'd love to make contact with people, and I'd love to hear about people's experiences.
Are you planning on a book tour or anything like that?
I'm doing a virtual book tour. I'm going to be doing
okay.
some cities, but I'm doing a lot of exactly what I'm doing now with you.
Okay. Great. Well, are there any words of wisdom or important information you'd like to give our listening audience?
Just, again, how important it is that we do this now, that it's really essential, that we have the technological and scientific sophistication to extinguish the human race. And there has to be a shift. There has to be a shift into this more universal way of thinking, where we do care about the greater good, because we could end civilization as we know it if we don't. We look at what's happening in the world, and we can see how important it is that more people have this level of consciousness and this essential kind of thought about how we can change the world. That this is,
it's interesting.
This is available for everybody, not just for the special people.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, all of our institutions are in some sort of crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, law, medicine, government, the financial world. Each area of human endeavor is really at a crisis. Look at all the cheating and problems in the scientific world. I mean,
yeah.
It's like the problems are coming to a head. And we really have to change the way we can't just keep doing what we've been doing. It's not working.
Right.
We have to come up with a better way to solve the problems that are rushing toward us in from all directions. I mean, they're not just one or two problems. There are many, many problems. We have problems with our water. We have problems with our air. We have problems with our food supply. We have problems with how many chemicals are in the environment. GMO is creating a whole nother set of problems. Nanotechnology is as well. We don't have safe drugs. We don't have a healthcare system that is either affordable or works very well. And our government's corrupt. The financial system's corrupt. The corruption is just in everything.
Yeah.
So I think that the only way out of the mess is to develop a higher state of consciousness.
Exactly. You know, we were talking about how personally we can be forced into doing these things. On a global level, the world is being forced into doing something new.
Well, look at the nuclear. I mean, it was one thing when we had the bomb and Russia had the bomb and Russia was fairly intact, or the Soviet Union was fairly intact, and these bombs weren't getting into the hands of the highest bidder. But look at what nuclear bombs are for sale in the black market. For God's sake. I mean, and then Iran, I read something the other day, North Korea was sending stuff to Iran right before this agreement so that they could have, launch capability, you know. Mm. I mean, we really live in a world that's absolutely insane. So that's why things are going toward something not good. On a very big scale, unless we can stop it. And I think the only way we can stop it is raising the level of consciousness.
Exactly.
That's it.
Do you remember in one of the Alice Bailey books, she talks about that we have until 2025 to make this shift?
Yeah.
I
got chills on that one. Yeah.
Me too.
That's very interesting. And there is information. I don't know if you ever looked at the stuff that was brought back by the time traveler from beyond that time. But there is a possibility of a severe nuclear war in that time frame, around 2025.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're all
so
set up for it.
At least in one of our probable realities, Russia launched a surprise attack and took out 35 American cities. Including D.C. D.C. is no longer the capital. I think the capital is in Wyoming or something. So that's one timeline. Mm. There's one timeline when that did happen, and things are very different. Life is not pleasant. So that hopefully we're not on that timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but yeah, I think that's why. I think there's a critical, and I think it does involve nuclear nuclear capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
It might also involve other things, you know, like not having enough food and water and having a cancer rate of 50% of the population due to the chemicals. But, there's that big thing sitting there as a possibility that we need to navigate around.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, that's... I'm very glad you wrote the book. And
me too.
I thank you very much for joining us this hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Yes, it's spiritualtelepathy.net, and anybody can reach me through that website. And the book is available on all the usual outlets, Amazon and so on.
Well, Colleen, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you taking the time.
I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you for having me.
All righty. Next week, we are interviewing Dr. Kareem, Back to the Future for Mankind, Biogeometry, and then Diane James on the 2nd of May, The Real Brass Ring, Change Your Life Course Now. Thank you very much for joining us for Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.